The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
David Myler, good morning.
Good morning.
Talk to us about Jesse Lingard. What has happened over the last few weeks? Why has Jesse Lingard not only rediscovered a previous version of himself, but it seems like the best version of himself has come out?
Yeah, just simply because he's happy. He's playing football. You could see him last night. He's playing with a smile on his face. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, you could tell, obviously, he loves Manchester United. He loved being there. He played a lot, but, you know, in the last, probably, what, year, 80 months, he's not played much under Solskjaer. So to get that loan move and get into a team, working with a manager who knows him, he's just, you know, he's just playing with a smile on his face and he's enjoying his football, and you can see that in his performances.
If you're Manchester United at the moment, are you looking at him and saying, yep, this guy has a real role to play for us next season? Or is it just one of those things where the makeup of their talent just doesn't allow him to get back in and get enough minutes to allow him to keep that confidence?
I think it would be something they'll look at. I think Jesse will wonder how much game time he'll get, you know, if he goes back to United. You know, obviously, his performances have been very good for West Ham, but if he makes the Euro squad for England, that would be down to, you know, his form at West Ham. So he might look then after that tournament, or if he doesn't make that tournament, you know, I need to be playing regular football. I believe he's now 28, so he's not as young as we all think he is, but it'd be certainly a case for him that I reckon he'll look to move on. Of course, look, United will only be laughing, because if they were to have sold Jesse Lingard in January, they probably wouldn't have got a lot from him. Now his stock price would be, you know, way up, just due to his performances, the goals he scored, the assists he's had. So I think probably what will happen will be best case scenario. He'll move probably permanently to West Ham. United will get a lot more money than they would have. And Jesse will be happy going there.
It probably shows, David, the amount of natural confidence you need to actually succeed at Manchester United, that it's almost a given that things might not go your way, certainly under the level that they were under Alex Ferguson, that you need to have a serious reservoir of self-belief to actually get through those tough moments.
Of course, but I think I did highlight before in the past on the show that, like, Jesse's gone through some tough stuff outside of football. He has spoken openly about it, and that does take a great effect. I know Manchester United, they're a great family club, they'll have supported him. But at times, it's that release once you actually are playing football that you can go up the pitch and you can forget about everything else going on in the world and you can just concentrate on that game of football. And I think that's probably been, like, the biggest thing for him is, you know, just getting back on that pitch, having belief in yourself. It will have come with the games he's played in. So, you know, look, it has been a tough time for him, but now we're seeing, you know, the best of Jesse Lingard.
When it comes to West Ham and their prospects at the end of the season, I know Declan Rice is out injured, and you'd suspect that the Chelsea result on Saturday was a bit of an aberration. So nobody's saying that they're going to get there. But how close do you reckon this is going to go to West Ham getting top four?
Well, look, do you know what, it's going to be very tough. But you know, I love David Moyes' post-match interview last night. And he said, I've seen pundits and everybody talking about West Ham in the top four. And if you'd said that a year ago, you know, he was kind of smiling and laughing, talking about it. And he said, why not? Like, you know, they've got seven games to go. If they go into them with the confidence that they're going into games. Even, like, look, of course, I know they were very comfortable in that game last night. They conceded, you know, goals. But in the past, West Ham would have probably given that up and they would have probably drawn the game. They found a way to win. So why not? Look, it's a bit of a fairy tale story. It's a bit like, you know, look, I know it's slightly different with Leicester winning the league, but it's something different. You know, if West Ham were to break the top four, it would be incredible, because you're looking at one of the bigger teams missing out. So yes, it's going to be very tough, but why not? Like, why can't we believe that they could, you know, push on and finish the top four?
But one of the reasons why it may not happen is because of Liverpool. Liverpool and their charge right back up the Premier League table tonight, David, I presume from a Liverpool supporter standpoint, is just such a huge night for them. I guess memories of 2018 come to mind. Is there a lot of anger amongst Liverpool fans that getting revenge against Real Madrid for what happened that night is a necessary step?
I wouldn't say revenge. I certainly wouldn't look at it like that. You know, Liverpool went on the following year and obviously won it against Spurs. So this, you know, this is just another opportunity. Like, Jurgen Klopp has highlighted the fact that it's kind of become a mini season for them. You know, you've seen their performance against Arsenal, how dominant they were. So certainly now they'll be looking at, can we and we kick on there, and they'll fancy themselves against Real Madrid. You know, there was a great thing shown of the Real Madrid squad from the last few years. There is still quite a few players still playing. They're not the same Real Madrid as of old. So certainly Liverpool coming back into a good bit of form is only positive for them. And I just feel that Liverpool will get the better of Madrid.
Why so?
Firstly, because I'm biased. I'm a Liverpool supporter. I don't know. It's just, you know, Liverpool have always... The biggest thing I always felt for Jurgen is how does he turn Liverpool into, you know, a Premier League winning team? We always know Liverpool are going to be, you know, up there. You've seen a few years ago when they just pipped to the title by City and, of course, winning it. They've always been able to turn up in Europe and perform. You've seen, you know, obviously, I know they lost the Europa League final and they get to the Champions League final after that and they lose that. But then they go back. They've always been able to turn up in the one-off games and perform. They've always been that European team. Like, I know, obviously, I've relationships with a lot of the players, but like Jurgen had set their stall out in the sense that they used to train on Tuesday and Wednesday nights when they weren't in the Champions League and kind of shaped it around that. That was kind of their end goal. I just feel that, like, going into this game, like, even if you look at the Arsenal-Liverpool game, Arsenal defended deep and was kind of their own mistakes. Whereas Real Madrid are going to come out and they're going to go to Liverpool. We're Real Madrid. We're going to play our game. Like, there won't be as much respect as Liverpool get in the Premier League. They'll go, we saw that in Leipzig, that they'll go out and they'll want to play. They'll press Liverpool high. You know, they'll go after them, which will open the game up. And I think Liverpool on the counter-attack with the front three that they have, it will suit them. You know, it's why we saw, you know, Salah, Mané performing well against Leipzig, you know, getting the goals. So I just find Madrid are going to come out and, you know, try and force their style. And I think Liverpool will be able to pick them off at times. And of course, if you give those players space, they will score goals.
David, I guess one of the players that Real Madrid will give plenty of respect for tonight is Trent Alexander-Arnold. And like he was very impressive on Saturday night against Arsenal. And Michael Richards was talking about him being, you know, the best fullback in Europe. And, you know, I just wanted to get your take on that. Like, where does he rank in terms of the top tier leagues in Europe in terms of fullbacks? And how ridiculous does Gareth Southgate's decision look now to drop him from the England squad?
Look, it's a very tough one. I'm biased. I'm not as strong-minded as Carragher. For any of those who watch Monday Night Football and the way he speaks about him. But certainly Trent, if he touches up on his defensive duties, but going forward, there's no doubt he's the best right back in the world with his, you know, his range of passing, his delivery. He can even pop up with goals. It was very surprising to see him not in the England squad. England do have a array of, you know, very good right backs, with Walker, Trippier, Reece James, even, you know, Kieran Trippier. There's very good defenders, all slightly different. I suppose Trippier and Trent are probably the closest because they both have very good delivery, albeit I think Trent's is better. It was a surprise. Maybe it is, you know, kind of a wake-up call to Trent. Kind of like Gareth wants him back at the level that he knows he can get him at. And then we've seen that there was a reaction in his performance via Arsenal. So it was an interesting one, but maybe, you know, sometimes players do need that kind of kick up the backside. But I certainly expect, you know, Trent to be going to the Euros with England and definitely pushing, whether they play the wing backs or whether they play the fourth at the back. It'll be interesting, but I definitely do, you know, I do think that Trent he's certainly up there as one of the best fullbacks in the world.
You mentioned the kick up the ass, and that's probably something that maybe Trent needed. And like he's spoken since about how the fact that, you know, he doesn't really pay any attention to the England call-ups, it'd be a lovely thing if it happens again. But even from your own career or you know, experiences of playing with other international players at clubs, like if someone doesn't get picked in an international squad, do you see that happen often, that a player maybe gets that desire to then, you know, knuckle down and focus and perhaps become a better player, that maybe being dropped from an international squad once or twice could actually be a really good thing for a player?
No, definitely. You could become comfortable. You know, that's a thing. I've spoken about this in the past. Like, when we qualified for the Euros in 2016, I'd featured in some of the qualifier games and I picked up an injury before the Bosnia games. I was just so desperate to make the 23 to make sure that I was going to France. I became quite comfortable then. I didn't push myself and kick on. I could have done more if you looked at, you know, after the couple of games, you know, in training, whatever. I was so desperate to make the 23. I didn't concentrate then. I kind of get on the pitch. I kind of became, you know, almost, I'm here now. This is it. I've done it. But I should have gone on another level. And sometimes fellas become like that. That sometimes when you are dropped, it is a shock to the system. You do think like, I need to do more. I was just so concentrated making those, you know, on that 23 when Martin picked it, that I should have done more when I was in training. I know now, looking back, I won't say it's a regret. It's, you know, it's an experience. I've learned from it. But certainly, like in this case with Trent, he'll definitely have played on his mind. And the whole thing of like, I won't listen to, you know, the outside noise that Trent would have heard. It's going to play on his mind because it was everywhere. Everybody was, you know, talking about it. And then obviously when his manager comes out, digs him up and says, I don't know how Garrett's not putting him in. I couldn't believe it either. But at the same time, it's like, it will have been on his mind. And of course, you could tell by his performance. That's probably the best he's played all season, which is only good for Liverpool and it's good for him. But you'd expect him now to continue that on and get himself straight back into the England squad.
Klopp was talking about the possibility of starting all four of those attackers, the usual front three and Jota, and he says, there will be a moment when we give it a try. Is it tomorrow? We will see. If you're Klopp this evening, David Myler, is it all four? Is it Jota in with the big three up front and hoping for the best?
I don't think anyone knows it's hoping for the best. You know, I think like Jota's well capable of playing in midfield. He's proven that. You know, all the only thing is he would then, if he slots into that midfield three, he's going to be very attacking as opposed to, you know, with Milner, Thiago, Wijnaldum, Fabinho, there's more balance. So that whoever, if he does go that way, whichever two he plays midfield, you'd be probably looking at Fabinho and Thiago or Fabinho and Wijnaldum, that they'll be able to get a balance to allow Jota to get forward and join in on the attacks. Will he go that way? Oh, I can't predict his mind. Like Jota has obviously had good international form scoring, then come back in and get the two goals against Arsenal that you'd certainly expect. There is a case for him to play. Look, I'd love to see him put all four of them in because I do think Jota will do his defensive duties. But it would be interesting to see. I would like to see him go with the four. I think Jota deserves that. You know, he scored some crucial goals. He's been a fantastic signing for Liverpool. So I would like to see him go with the four of them.
And sorry then, so Jota will be the front of a midfield three. Who would be your two behind as a rule?
I'd go for Fabinho and Thiago. And Genie misses out.
That's probably a tight one in Klopp's mind, is it, between Wijnaldum and Thiago, because of the fact that Jota is such an attacking player. But then again, like, we haven't actually seen him in the midfield as often as he has been up front, and I guess that's just such an underrated part of Jota's game.
No, it is. Of course, look, you could make the case that does he then drop Firmino, start Jota, and then, you know, muddle around with the front three? He's got great options.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think against Real Madrid, Thiago's used to playing, you know, against Real Madrid, say, with the, you know, Spanish football from his time at, you know, Barcelona, that he can control a game with his, you know, with his passing, etc. And then obviously Fabinho is excellent at what he does in, you know, breaking up the second balls, winning those, stopping counterattacks and stuff like that. I think Genie's probably more industrious in the way he gets around the pitch and that, but I think Thiago brings that, you know, type of control. It'll certainly be interesting, you know, but that's the way Jurgen's not a big fan of breaking up the front three unless he's gone, you know, unless he's changing the squad. And certainly this isn't a game to be resting Mane or Salah or whatever. So I'd expect the front three to remain the same. It's just whether or not he tries to slot him into midfield.
Just on Fabinho then, David, like back in midfield on Saturday, and I think that performance on Saturday probably just illustrated how badly Jurgen Klopp needs him in that team. I mean, you know, they've beaten Leipzig and Wolves and now Arsenal since mid-March. Perhaps no coincidence that those results have come since Fabinho's come back into this team.
Yeah, you miss that presence, you know, as a holding midfielder. You know, what he gives. He's very comfortable on the ball. He's very good at reading danger. He just, of course, look, he slotted in centre half and he did reasonably well. Obviously, there were certain games where it didn't work, you know, it didn't go as planned. But you always kind of find that when the centre halves were injured, they were moving two or three players around to kind of accommodate. Whereas now he's just kind of going, do you know what? Nat Phillips has done well. Kabak is doing, you know, getting better and doing well. I'm just going to go with the two of them. And a lot of the time now, Fabinho is actually stopping the attacks in midfield so that it doesn't actually get to the back line, which then that's the big presence that he brings. There's no doubting, you know, he's an exceptional at what he does. You know, you've got to, if you've got to be honest and say he's up there with the best in the world at doing it. Obviously, there's some other outstanding players in that position. But that's the benefit. That's why he is, you know, a holding midfielder. That's why Liverpool signed him. Of course, due to other circumstances, they had to slot him in centre half. But certainly putting him back in has been a game changer for Liverpool and has made them more balanced. Certainly allows, you know, the other players to go forward.
David, like Nat Phillips and Ozan Kabak in the centre of that defence, like the 18th central defensive pairing that Klopp has had to deal with this season, and he stumbled across something quite good. They played well on Saturday. How do you feel with that pair coming up against someone like Karim Benzema tonight? Because you could argue that this is a new type of challenge for them, so, you know, a striker with a world pedigree. But then again, you look at, you know, every training session at Melwood, they come up against the big three, Firmino, Salah and Mane. So are you worried at all about the prospect of those two coming up against Karim Benzema tonight?
I think they're starting to, you know, form a little partnership now. They're starting to get more, you know, familiar with their own squad of players. Of course, when you play for Liverpool, you've got the two fullbacks who are bombing forward. You know, you're then isolated one-on-one. That's the beauty of Virgil van Dijk and all the other best centre-halves in the world, that they can defend 1v1. They don't mind it. That was the big concern in games Liverpool lost, that defenders were being left on their own. Fullbacks, we just had no cover. Now Fabinho adds that discipline and that know-how of the game that certainly Kabak and Phillips have been able to deal with players. There's no doubting that Karim Benzema has been a wonderful player, probably one of the most underrated in world football for many years. I think a lot of people just dismiss him, but if you look at his numbers, I think he was obviously overshadowed by Cristiano, which is normal. I think Cristiano's done that to a lot of people over his career. It is a new challenge for them, but at the same time, they'll have played against top players. Like you said there, even training against the front three will only make them better. So it will be a challenge, but look, they just need to make sure that they're on it. They keep it simple, cut out any mistakes. They get tight when they need to, drop off when they need to. And I'm pretty sure that they'll be confident in themselves and their ability to stop Benzema doing anything.
Let's talk about Manchester City against Borussia Dortmund then, David. Obviously, the big narrative around this is the fact that City are losing a totemic striker and there's a certain individual going up against them tonight who's going to be on the market in the next summer or two. Is there anything about this potential deal of your Manchester City that would throw you off the scent? Because everything just seems to work potentially here. Every box seems to be ticked when it comes to Erling Haaland.
No, it does. Albeit he's not Pep's typical striker, is he? You know, you look at back at Barcelona with Eto'o and that, then obviously going to Bayern Munich or whatever. Okay, Lewandowski was that big man. But he's always kind of gone for like small, nimble, who's quick, who's very mobile. Like, okay, Haaland is, don't get me wrong, he's very quick, but he does have the passing ability that Aguero has. Aguero can kind of come off the shoulder and kind of link the play. Haaland, if you watch him, we've seen many times because this big conversation of Haaland or Mbappe, they've showed that he just wants to play inside the six-yard box. He just wants to score goals. His record is off the charts. I think tonight is a bit of a trial move for Haaland. I think if he's to, you know, put in performance against Man City, I think then it kind of comes out of Pep Guardiola's hands, in the sense that the big boys who are running Man City are just saying, right, do you want them? Yes or no? I think we're going to go and get him. There obviously is that problem between Guardiola and Raiola, whether or not they'll be able to work together, I don't know. Maybe Pep will just say, look, sign him, he'll step aside, and then the big hitters will come in from Man City to organise that. Certainly, now Aguero's gone. Last week or the other day, Pep was saying, we don't have the money to buy anyone. And then he's kind of taunting in the last 48 hours that we'll be looking to bring someone in. So I do think Haaland fits the bill, whether or not they'll go from, I don't know. Of course, there's that massive cloud in the sky about Harry Kane. What's he going to do? I think Pep would be a big admirer of Harry Kane, someone who knows the league. It'd be certainly interesting, but, you know, Haaland, you get a young fella that, you know, you could potentially have for the next 7, 8, 9 years.
How dramatic a shift would it be for Pep Guardiola to have a system that gets the most out of someone like Erling Haaland? Is it worth the shift that you mentioned there in order to get the best out of him, basically?
I don't think they'll have to shift too much.
Right.
Like, you know, our City will still play with the other 10 just dominating possession. Like, and he'll coach. That's what the best do. They coach them to adjust, like, make them adjust, make them play better, kind of suit their system. There's no doubting Pep will be able to do that. You look at all throughout his career, moving players into different positions and, you know, getting the best out of them. You looked at Lahm coming into midfield and it looked like a stroke of genius when he was at Bayern Munich. So there's no doubting that if Haaland came, he'll make him, you know, touch up on all round of his game. Because we know going forward, if he gets chances in around the box, he'll score goals. But if, can you imagine Haaland, you know, in a Man City team, he'd probably get the bones of 40 goals a season. Yeah. I've no doubt that Pep would be able to tweak a few things and make him even better.
David, just on Man City and I guess the pressure on Pep Guardiola to deliver in the Champions League, like there always is, is there a little bit extra pressure this year considering the fact that the Premier League title is all but wrapped up? It gives him maybe a bit less of an excuse. You could be excused for taking an eye off Europe some years, but this year, really, the focus for them now has to be fully on the Champions League. Does that add a little bit extra pressure on the shoulders of Pep Guardiola?
Of course, there'll be pressure. It's the one he's not won with City. He didn't win it with Bayern Munich either. So there is that pressure. He's not had it or won it in a while. That's kind of benchmark, isn't it? That's the one that those managers will want to win. Of course, Man City have never done it, so that challenge is there for him. There will be pressure. They'll want to get that Champions League trophy. Look, like you said, they've got the League Cup final, so they're in that. I think they needed 7 points, something like that, in their remaining games, so they look like they're quite comfortable. I think the big thing is last season was very disappointing when they dropped out, that they didn't kind of go for the game, kind of tried to play reserve football. And you know, if you looked at the earlier stages of the Premier League season, Pep came out and said, like, I'm changing this. I'm not happy. I think they'd won a game. I saw an interview he did where he just said, I'm not happy with the way we're playing. He said, I want us to go back to just getting on the ball, playing it with a bit of freedom. I think when they go into this game against Dortmund, they'll obviously respect them, but you can just imagine Man City are just going to go and dominate. They're in great form. Obviously, they had a very good victory over Leicester. So I expect them to go out, dominate possession, and then I think they just need to take it game by game and just focus on, you know, next one that matters. He's been very good at rotating the squad, so he's trying to keep as many players fresh and kind of hit this. He's nearly got 17, 18 players playing at a consistently high level. So whichever team he does pick for the Dortmund game, they're all playing at a top level. The pressure's on him to win the league or the Champions League, sorry. So whether or not they'll do it, I don't know, but they certainly got a good chance.
Yeah, they certainly do. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff in that game and indeed the Real Madrid against Liverpool game tonight. Just one other Premier League talking point from the weekend, David, is Tottenham Hotspur. Newcastle coming from behind to get a point against Jose Mourinho's side, and predictably he once again blamed the players for their failings. Same manager, different players is what he said to describe the contrast in success throughout his career. How does that make you feel as a player when your manager is saying something like that?
Well, you go one or two ways. You either say, I'm going to prove him wrong, or you sulk and moan in the corner and then the relationship is just dissolves. It's not a great thing to hear. You'd kind of prefer him, if he's going to say it, you'd say it in the change room, which I imagine he probably has said something behind, you know, closed doors. Of course, look, they're not the same players, you know, Davinson Sanchez and those there. It's not John Terry. You know, it's just the sad truth. He knows that when he took the job, when he went in there. That's a group of players, a very good group of players, but they're not the Chelsea team. When we speak about some of the best Premier League teams of all time, that Chelsea team under Mourinho in the 2004-05 seasons comes up all the time. They're an incredible team. So I think it's interesting, one, what he'll be able to do, because if he keeps coming up with comments like that, he'll lose the change room, and that will be the hardest thing for him. But certainly the other day, they were very poor in their defensive, you know, the mistakes they were making, everything. Like, Newcastle should have really won the game with the chances they had. I think Spurs were only in it because of, you know, Harry Kane. We just know how prolific he is. He gets a couple of chances, he scores goals. So I think Mourinho really needs to find a back four to settle on. He's chopped and changed too many times. I think that's probably what he's probably looking at that in training every day and saying, like, I can't get these defenders to do what I want. He keeps, like I said, chopping and changing. He can't find a good balance. So he needs to address that situation, whether or not they, you know, they get to the summer and they look at, can we sign top class and have to kind of improve all of them? It would be interesting to see what he does.
Just one final thing then, David, to ask you about is League One. This is where we always finish, of course, on a Monday or Tuesday morning. Aidan McGeady with an 81st-minute free kick yesterday against Peterborough.
Watching.
We're talking about Jesse Lingard and resurgences in careers. I think people are enjoying what Aidan McGeady is doing this season. He's been brilliant for Sunderland. Their promotion hopes are still very much alive. Like, where does McGeady rank, I guess, David, in terms of the most talented players you've seen firsthand and some of the most talented Irish players that we've had over the last few years?
Aidan's unbelievable. Honestly, like, it's you know, people will look at it, but in training, if you remember the Georgia game, in the, I don't know, what's the 92nd minute, Aidan did the little, it's now renowned as the McGeady spin, and he slots the ball into the top corner with his left foot. Aidan did that on a regular in training. His ability, that I think one of the hardest things in football is that ability to beat someone 1v1. You know, it's the, you know, the winger out in the, you know, he wants to eye up the fullback, take him on 1v1. Aidan has that in abundance. Now, of course, Aidan turned 35 the other day. Time isn't exactly on his side. He's had a wonderful career. He's definitely a gifted player. You look at when he first came into the Ireland scene and he's played for that many years. I don't know exactly how many caps he has, but I know he's about 81, 82. Am I right saying that if you check?
93.
Okay, that will tell you. You know, like, that he's been around for a long time. Of course, somebody will fight back that we didn't see enough of him in the Ireland shirt. Yes, there would have been key moments or key games where he's produced and performed. It would have, you know, of course, like to see it over a duration. Certainly Aidan was an incredible player for Ireland and everything. Just for whatever reason, at the start of this season, it didn't exactly work out. Imagine Aidan's very outspoken, speaks his mind, which I have no problem with. But there's no doubting his ability on the pitch. You see Lee Johnson come in, speak a few things round. What's he do? He brings McGeady straight back in, and you look at the success that they've had since Johnson came in and McGeady's come back into the team.
Yeah. Roll on season 5 of Sunderland Until I Die, basically, is what I'm hearing. David Myler, great stuff as ever. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.